Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Have you ever seen two animals get into a disagreement? Maybe you've seen a bird chase an intruding bird away from its nests, or dogs bark at one another as they walk down the street. I know that I've seen nature documentaries where elk use their big antlers to battle one another as they compete for mates. Being an animal can be tough, because out in nature, it's often a fight to see who has the most power to live on another day. Today's guest is an expert on how and why different animals fight with one another to survive.
The reason that as an animal you want to move up in that power structure is because if you're at the top of the power structure, it typically means more mates, more food, all that kind of thing. So there's this constant battling going on to rise up there.
This is Lee Dugatkin. He's a biology professor, and his research focuses on how animals interact with one another. He has all sorts of incredible stories about the different ways animals compete against each other for natural resources. Just take hermit crabs, for example.
From a hermit crab perspective, I mean, they have a giant claw, essentially. And that claw can be quite dangerous when it comes to fighting other hermit crabs. And in the hermit crab case, it's all about what kind of shell you live in. So the hermit crabs themselves, they're soft and they need to find a shell out there and they move into it and then they basically carry their home on their back. And this makes them safe from all kinds of predators. And the power struggles that happen in these hermit crabs are all about getting the best shells. And the best shell isn't always the biggest one. It's the one that fits on you ideally, and allows you to both move around and have protection. If you have too big a shell, you really can't move around. If you have too little a shell, you really can't move in there, and it doesn't give you a lot of protection. So the males are always jousting and trying to get the best shell.
So hermit crabs are fighting over the shells that fit them the best. What's really cool is that hermit crabs are able to figure out which shells are best by using echoes.
Hermit crabs are really good at judging this. They can see the shell that the other animal has. And what they do is they kind of go up to it and they start tapping on it with their claws. By listening to the echo, they can kind of judge how good a shell this is. And then if it's a good shell, you get a fight. And usually the larger individuals win this fight. When it's over, they basically just pull the other smaller crab out and they move in for themselves. And now the other little unprotected crab has to go around and find a shell for themselves. Now there are probably yet other crabs that are smaller than it that it can evict from a shell and pick it up. So it's kind of this constant thing where the animals are moving from shell to shell and battling it out.
For hermit crabs, the biggest crab is normally the one who comes out on top with their brute strength. But for other animals, these power struggles require a little bit of sneakiness. Some animals even spy on their opponents.
There are these great spies out there, animal spies. We were working with these tiny fish. They're called swordtails. You can go over to your aquarium store and you can buy them. They're like 2 inches long or something. And we know from the way they behave in the wild that they're always fighting with each other and they're always jousting for power in one way or another. But it turns out that it's so much more interesting. So basically, what these fish are doing is they're spying on the battles between other fish, other swordfish. And so they see two other swordtails. These are males typically. So they see, you know, Swordtail Joe and Swordtail Mike fighting each other. They then use the information from who won that fight to determine what they're going to do when they interact with Swordtail Joe or Swordtail Mike, right? And so what that means is if they interact with someone who they saw win a fight, they're much more reticent. They're not likely to get into a very intense skirmish with them.
That makes sense to me. If I ran into Swordtail Mike just after he beat up Swordtail Joe, I wouldn't want to mess with him.
If they see somebody who lost it's even more interesting because when they see somebody who's lost, they make this really kind of almost human-like fine scale calculation. If they see somebody that's lost, but that individual has put up a good fight when losing, they're less likely to go after them than if they see somebody who lost and they just gave up.
Wow, that's really cool. I think it's interesting that even little fish are able to spy and collect information about their potential rivals and opponents. Another animal that Lee studied competing in the wild is the raven. Now, ravens are super intelligent creatures, so their observations of one another are much more sophisticated than the swordtail fish.
In ravens, you have this thing called the audience effect. And all the audience effect means is that if you have two ravens that are involved in some sort of aggressive interaction, what they do is the way they interact with each other depends on who's watching them. Not who they're watching, but who's watching them, what the audience is made up of. And in ravens, what you find is that if an individual is losing some sort of fight with somebody else, it will really up how many loud calls it makes if the audience is made up of its friends and its family. Because what happens is the audience members then tend to come in and help it.
So if a raven is losing a fight in front of his family and friends, he goes, "Help, help!" And his friends and family are able to come save the day. But the raven only yells for help if he knows the audience is his family and friends.
If it's losing that fight, and the audience is made up of the friends and relatives of the other raven who's beating it up, the loser doesn't give off these really loud calls. In fact, they get quieter because they know that if there's noise and attraction to what they're doing, the ones that are going to come over now are the friends and family of the individuals already beating you up, and that's only going to make it worse for you. So this idea that they're actually paying attention to who's watching them and then changing their behavior there. Civilized is a tricky word, but I would say that's bordering civilized.
So the ravens know who is watching them and whether or not they can rely on that audience for help. I think that it's pretty neat that animal social interactions are more complicated than just big animal beats little animal. Another species where you see lots of interesting social relationships is between dogs and wolves. Lee got to see a pack of wolves interact firsthand when he was in Vienna for work.
About an hour outside of Vienna, there's this wolf science park, and it's really this incredible place where they're doing all kinds of scientific studies on wolf packs and dog packs. The person who runs it was my host, and he was taking me around. And so I actually got to go in and interact with some of these wolves, which is something you don't do unless he's with you. But I got a chance to interact with them. But more interesting was that we were sort of walking around, and there are these wolf packs and there are these dog packs. And they're just such different dynamics going on. So in the wolf pack, we walked by one, it was a small group, two or three individuals. And in that group, one of the wolves basically was sort of sitting on top of the other wolf and kind of had the subordinate, the lower ranking wolf that it was sitting on, it kind of had its jaws sort of locked onto the skull of the other individual, not hurting it, but basically just making it very, very clear what was going on.
Can you picture that? The head wolf was sitting on top of one of the other wolves, and he had the other wolf's head in his mouth. Not biting, but just sending the clear message, if I wanted to bite you, I could.
And what my host, Kurt, told me was that powerful wolf was making it clear to a number of different parties. First of all, it was making it clear to the other wolf in its pack. And second of all, it was making it clear to us as the observers that it was the top wolf in this pack. And it turns out that the wolves are really subtle and complex about the way that their power dynamics work.
That sounds intense. The big wolf might sound kind of scary. But Lee explains that each of the wolves knowing their place ends up being a good thing for the wolves in general.
When you go over to the dogs, they're a bit more violent and they have more skirmishes than the wolves do. And Kurt and others think this is because the dogs can hurt each other, but not to the extent that wolves can hurt each other. So wolves kind of have to be careful about really scaling up violence because they could get killed if they do that. So it tends to be a lot of kind of ritualistic things.
I guess it is better that the big wolf is sitting on top of the small wolf, pretending to bite its head, rather than actually biting it. These interactions between the animals are pretty complicated, and that's what makes Lee so excited. When he sees animals observing one another and reacting to new situations, it reminds him of how much there is to learn about the natural world that we live in.
It's just more and more evidence that so many of the things that we assumed were uniquely human aren't. Everything from chimpanzees and bonobos and hermit crabs and swordtail fish and mongooses are using these behaviors that are similar to some of the things we see in humans. We can start looking to see, when are they spying on each other? And when are they paying attention to who's watching them? And maybe kind of pull little threads out that might be useful to understand our own power dynamics.
I guess even humans are animals that rely on social interactions to get the things we need to survive. When I hear about the way animals interact with one another, I am just amazed. We live in a world with lots of intelligent creatures, and understanding them better helps me experience wonder.
A quick word for you parents. This is Marcus Smith. I'm host of the Constant Wonder podcast, source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode for kids because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff that kids just love. But you may be wanting more. We've got a whole episode devoted to the way animals go head-to-head against one another in the natural world. If you'd like to hear the full presentation, find Constant Wonder wherever you get your podcasts and look for the episode titled Power Struggles in the Peaceable Kingdom. We actually think you're going to love more than just one episode of our podcast. It's an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. Do you remember when you had time for wonder? We suspect you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman-Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.